part of the Adventures of Indiana Jim family of podcasts.
Coming to you not exactly live from
the cliffs of insanity,
a man who needs no introduction.
Don't tell me you've never heard of me.
Have you ever heard of Plato, Aristotle, Socrates?
Yes.
Morons.
And now, Indiana Jim.
You have chosen wisely.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Indiana Jim and the Writing Crusade. I know it's been a while. This is the first episode of 2018, but we've got a bit of a new direction. And to not belabor the point, just want to introduce a fellow writer. We've kind of become friends over the tweeters and the Facebooks and the interweb tubes. And he is my Sala, my Marcus Brody, my Mutt Williams. He is Dan, the art man.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? It's great to be on the show. I've been a fan of the show ever since it started, so this is cool.
Yeah, I think you're my only listener. You were my only listener, so now we have nobody. No, I'm just kidding.
I've left a lot of comments.
That's right, and that's why I kind of thought you'd be good at this whole deal. And the reason, the biggest reason I asked you, Dan, to be a part of this show was because you are a guy, honestly, you're just a level above me where I am.
That's what I'd say about you, so that's cool.
Really? Well, maybe as a podcaster, I guess, you know. No, but, or my parenting, because I have teenagers and you don't. Who knows?
There we go.
But as a writer, you are further down the path of that crusade that this show is all about, that independent author crusade. You've got more works out there than I do. I had a couple novellas with a small press, but I didn't earn anything from them yet. So
I have a couple short stories in some anthologies with small presses, but that's it. Everything else is self-published. But
right,
I love self-publishing. So,
so real quick, if you would just kind of give us the breakdown, kind of where you're at on your writer journey.
Sure. I think I've been trying to write seriously for like 10 years now or something. And so I have about 20 short stories out there, and I am working on my fourth novel right now, but I haven't published any novels yet, but this is going to be the one. It's actually up for pre-order, and so that's exciting. I started writing a bunch of short stories, and then I tried novels, but they just kind of went all over the place. So I studied some story structure and plot, and now I think I'm writing publishable novel-length works.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And didn't you get some of that structure building from the Dan Wells, the seven...
Oh, yeah.
...thing, whatever that's called. I forget what that's called.
I think it's just called the Dan Wells seven-point story structure or something, watched that video like eight times.
It's great. It's really good, yeah.
So I use story points, the midpoint, the characters go from reaction to action and start making plans to fight back. So I'll just plan that to go in the midpoint of my story. And so I outline, and outlining helps me a lot, but I kind of outline with those big story points, and I put them in the right parts of my story. When you go from act one to act two, it's about 25% in, and that's when the story kind of, their world gets flipped upside down. Those kind of things have really helped me structure my stories, but I still kind of find out where it's going between those kind of big story points.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, don't you find it kind of varies from story to story?
If it's a short story, a lot of times I will just write it by the seat of my pants, but if it's anything like 4,000 words or more, I outline it a lot now. But, like, each chapter is a couple sentences. So when I say, I outline one, but
it's just a brief, synopsis kind of.
And I've learned from, like, Chris Fox and that book, 2K to 10K. If you know at least a little bit of what you're going to write before you write the scene, you can write much faster. Right. So I try and do that, too, and that helps me a lot.
Right. Yeah, and from my experience, I found that the more I tried to settle on one way of doing it, mm-hmm. the less able I was to really make the stories come to life. And
sure.
And I mostly think in large scale novel type plots. I very rarely think in the area of short stories because I haven't really read a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And me either. I'm just now getting to the point where I'm starting to read a little bit more. But the novel structure is always the one thing that appealed most to me. In fact, when I really started getting serious about like reading novels, it was, you know, I went to the, it was B. Dalton back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking, you know, 98, 99. So you were like probably still in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking I want a really long, involved series.
Yeah.
And so my choices at that point were either Game of Thrones, which is only, it was only like three books in, I think, at that point. Maybe two. Well, I'd say it was three. And then there was, and that's not very long, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
There was,
Wheel of Time.
Terry Goodkind. There was okay. Terry Goodkind's Sword of Truth. And then, of course, Wheel of Time. And maybe a couple other ones. You know, David Weber had his huge thing. David Farland had the Rune Lord series, and I kind of looked at them all. And
mm-hmm.
the one that appealed to me most was Eye of the World.
Yeah.
Love
that first
so,
book.
Yeah, yeah. And so, man, I ate up mm-hmm. all of Robert Jordan, man. I ate it up. And I tried Terry Goodkind, man. That second book would just lost me. And I was just like, this is the most idiotic plot I've ever seen in my life. We just went through this whole thing in the first book, and it was a great first book. And then, like in the second book, we're like, "Okay, why are we doing this again?"
Hmm.
But you already met the villain. You've already confronted, and he's a putz. Like what? Okay, so spoiler alert: villain's a putz in Sword of Truth. I don't think, frankly, Terry Goodkind had any idea what he was doing. But anyway, so my first initial go at writing a novel was like Tolkien. It was like
mm-hmm.
the Lord of the Rings knockoff. It was. Hey, if Terry Brooks can do Sword of Shannon, I can sure as heck do a Tolkien knockoff myself. which is funny, because when you look into the publication history of Sword of Shannon, that's exactly what Lester Del Rey had enlisted him for. It's like, we need to capitalize on the Tolkien popularity. So
let's write
a Tolkien knockoff, and that he knew what he was doing there. But then as it grew from there, he kind of made really an enduring classic saga. That's beside the point. Anyway, you know, I had gnomes, and I had other weird fantasy things, and just throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what would stick.
Yep.
And, you know, and I've had different story elements come at me in college and things, and it's sort of a distillation of a lot of my influences there. And that one actually still may, I think, is going to turn into a passable fantasy novel. I think it just needs a polish, honestly, because it's taken like three or four different iterations.
Mm.
And that kind of, you know, it's sort of, this thing sort of revealed itself to me gradually. And I sort of made this map and kind of went, kind of explored this map I made. And let's call this, and let's go from here to here and here.
That's cool.
And just sort of organically grew this thing. And that's one way of doing it. There was another fantasy novel that I have. Not sure what the title is going to be yet, but that pretty much is finished. Just needs a different ending. I just need to tweak the ending, I think, because it's a little silly the way it ends. But it's basically,
endings.
Yeah, right. We can talk about that one day. Maybe not today. So basically my inspiration for that book was, have you seen the movie First Night, Richard Gere?
Oh yeah.
Sean
yes.
Connery. Okay. So I love that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Probably my favorite, honestly, my favorite Arthur retelling, and people are going to shoot me. but it's like, what if King Arthur was like a real dude? You know, mm-hmm. and Lancelot was a real guy, and it had things and adventures, and things happened.
And also it has Welcome
adultery.
To Camelot.
All right. Welcome to Camelot. yes. Oh, so many good lines in there. My inspiration was, what if the traveling swordsman ended up getting killed by the kid he was teaching? And, like, it was the sword that did it. Hmm?
Ooh.
And so... And really, it was just that kernel of an idea,
mm-hmm.
and I started writing it, and I just went where the story went.
That's cool.
And sort of felt my way along, and it really felt kind of like a good YA yarn,
mm-hmm.
still may be. Most of the stuff I write is you know, generally kid appropriate.
Yeah, me
you
too.
You know, it's like Robert Jordan. It's for adults, but it's kid friendly, you know.
Yeah.
And that's how you hit the biggest market, I think. But anyway, besides
that's what
the
point, I naturally write too.
Yeah. So I mean, that started from just this little idea and grew, you know. It's like Robert Jordan. He had this beginning idea, he had the ending idea. How do I get those together? And then this other thing, the big one I'm working on for Grail Quest Books is more of a outlined thing. It just kind of started with my inspiration there was what if John Ford directed an Akira Kurosawa movie about medieval knights? Put those three things together, Western, Samurai, Medieval. What do you come up with there?
That's cool. Putting different ideas together like that is a great thing to do.
And that idea
came
from
writing excuses. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, also that came from my buddy T. Morris, who taught me about elevator pitches.
Nice.
You know, it's this meets this meets this. You know, it's like, okay, mm-hmm. that's a unique way to distill some ideas down.
Yeah.
And some of it also, so if I took more direct, influences, so the first one I told you about came from actually the Lord of the Dance soundtrack. And I was looking at the track listing sort of lent itself to a plot. It was just the Michael Flatley thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in college, you know, it sort of inspired me to write, well, what if there was a, like, what if this outlined an actual fantasy story? And that's where that came from.
That's cool.
With the sword book, obviously, that came from First Knight. But some of the other influences for that first novel were 13th Warrior,
mm-hmm.
with some First Knight thrown in there. This one had the, you know, the Western idea, but a big influence was the King Arthur with Clive Owen, sort of the milieu that Antoine Fuqua was building there. And it just kind of felt right. And so, in fact, my main character is named Arius, which is very similar to whatever Arthur's name was in that movie.
I like it.
Artorius,
name.
You know.
Okay.
So anyway, that one, I just started writing character sketches. You know, here's this guy. He comes from this. He does this. And as I was writing the different characters, I would come up with a new character. It's like, oh, okay, so where does he connect? And where does he connect? And, you know, all that stuff. So that sort of just grew out of creating these character sketches. And then I just it just sort of revealed itself to me from beginning to end, just like a movie. Just like so novels usually reveal That's themselves cool. to me like screenplays. It's like I can see the movie playing in my head. How do I put that in a novel?
Mm-hmm.
And then I've got another one that I'm working on. It's more pulp adventure thing. I told you about that. It's like a mixture of Pirates of the Caribbean, some steampunk thing, and Disney's Tailspin. You know?
Yeah, that's awesome.
So I kind of, depending on the idea, lends itself to the form that it takes when I work on it.
Okay.
So some of them just straight manuscript, like a Word file. The other one, like the big one I'm working on, is all in Scrivener, and it's all detailed, and I can see everything, and, you know, so it just kind of depends on...
That's cool.
...on how I do things. So I don't know if there was a point to going to all that, but that's... Maybe it'll prove interesting. What I really want to talk about, I guess in our first episode, Dan, is the dream of being an indie writer, being a professional... Why going the indie route as opposed to the traditional route? And
yeah, as far as what I'm doing it?
Yeah.
Well, I'm kind of treating this like a really passionate hobby. I do dream of just writing from home someday. but also, I love the idea of having the control. And I also happen to be a digital artist for my day job, so I can crank out covers and they don't look like self-published books. At least that's what I'm hoping. I've done a bunch of covers for other people too. And, I also want to create the audiobooks. And, I looked into formatting it and I kind of fell in love with that. I think it's fun to format the interior for ebooks and even paperbacks. And so I actually enjoy like all those different aspects of self-publishing and I enjoy having all of the control.
Right. And you cranked out some really good book covers, and I'm just looking at them now. And I'm sorry to say, I apologize that I never actually looked at your selection on the Kindle store, but I'm just looking here, and I just see some really, really good stuff here with the covers.
Oh, thank you. A lot of them were okay, and then I got different ideas and made them better. And so I just like the idea of being in control of my work, choosing the typography, setting it all up. I actually really enjoy that stuff. So setting the prices, changing things. I'm not really like a control freak, but I love the idea of getting to control that stuff, like from a creative standpoint.
Right.
So yeah, it helps that I have the digital artist background too for covers. And I've just seen kind of this huge revolution of a lot of people choosing self-publishing over traditional publishing.
Right.
And so I'm just going for the slow boil of I'm just going to write as many books as I can. I'm not really expecting things to take off till I have half a dozen books or more out there. But
right.
Yeah, the whole slow, long tail. Yeah, I just love indie publishing. I think it's really fun to learn all that stuff and put it out there and try and make it look just like the pros that are next to you on the bookshelf, mm-hmm. digital bookshelf, mm-hmm. in most cases.
But. Right. Yeah, and that's the idea. I forget what it's called. For me, you know, and I sort of came into the idea of being a professional writer before the Kindle, before mm-hmm. the big publishing boom. I mean, this was, you know, we're talking, what, 2009, 2010, somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't the Kindle just turn like 10 years old recently?
Wow.
So,
yeah, I think so.
And I started writing really, I mean, it was in college, but it was 10 years before that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, you know, as I was thinking about this possibility, it was like, you know, there was the agents and then there was the publishers and there was the whole regular route and there was no other way
right.
to do it. And so, and I've watched this thing happen and I'm like you, I'm thinking, I don't want to give up control over my properties.
Mm-hmm.
Like, given the opportunities that we have, and getting past some of the myths that we believe, like, A, you know, writing should be slow, you know?
Right.
Looking at the way the pulp authors did it, you know, Dickens and, mm-hmm. I don't know how far, you know, all the pulp writers, Robert E. Howard, you know, all those guys that were just cranking stuff out and ended up, I mean, some of the biggest, greatest classics of modern literature came from the pulps.
Yeah.
And the same people that the literati, you know, frowned and looked down their noses at back then.
Oh, yeah.
Now I'm no graphic artist. But I know that, you know, you and I talk about Dean Wesley Smith, and Chris Rush a lot. And, those are kind of our gurus, for this. I know that WMG Publishing, they have a kind of a course you can take, I think, about designing covers. And when you're talking about designing covers for ebooks, you know, you don't have to put a lot into it. You just have to learn a little bit about compositing,
mm-hmm.
And know where to go find some, royalty, what do you call it? Stock images, you know?
Yeah.
And you can buy a stock image for, you know, a couple of bucks. And create a cover. And so there are resources out there for all of us to learn from.
Yeah, there are a ton of great websites that have free photos you can use. They're high quality. You don't have to put their name, they're public domain. I use a lot of those. Sometimes I create my own art, but it's funny, the hardest thing is usually the typography. It seems like that'd be the easiest thing to just put, okay, you just put the title and then your author name. But how you do it, the font you choose, the placement, the balance, it really makes it go from looking amateur to pro. And that is harder than I thought it would be because I actually didn't like go to school for graphic design. I went to school for 3D art and animation.
Yeah.
So I would like create, I can create the artwork for the cover, but the typography has kind of been a learning curve. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But okay. That's the part that's hard to get right.
Right. And I guess also, you know, learning what we have learned about the amount that you can make off your own property and how much less, how many fewer
right.
units you have to sell
mm-hmm.
to make the same amount that you would get in a royalty from traditional publishing. You know, it's like,
yeah.
do you want to be famous or do you want to get paid?
Let me amend that.
Would you rather be a person whose name gets passed over in the bookstore for other big names and you still don't sell books?
Right.
Or do you want to get paid? And, you know, you don't have to build this huge, gigantic platform. You don't have to get noticed.
Right.
To earn a decent amount on your books. And then, like, and one of the things that Dean says, you know, once it's out on the internet, once it's out in Amazon and everything, it never goes out of print. And you can sell it from
exactly.
your website forever.
You're traditionally published. You have a very short window of when it's first put out there to do well. If it doesn't, it's tanked. And I've heard a lot of stories of self-published or indie authors. They put it out there, and like 3 years after its publication date, it starts to take off.
Right.
You know? So just keep writing.
Yeah. We all look at the big, you know, the lottery winners like J.K. Rowling.
And
people that write a book. I mean, even, you know, she's languishing in a regular day job, right?
Uh-huh.
Hammering out the Philosopher's Stone in a coffee shop, you know, and Scholastic happens to be looking at some possible titles and David Farland is the guy that goes that, you know, they ask him, what should mm-hmm. we look at? And they're like, hey, he's like, hey, how about this Harry Potter thing? That looks good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's funny that David just happened to be at the right place at the right time
mm-hmm.
to put his finger on Harry Potter. I mean,
yeah,
that guy should get a royalty from that, but no, I guess not. But you know, and so you get the Hollywood movie option, and they end up making the movies and sells billions of copies, you know.
Yeah.
And she comes out smelling like roses, you know, but she's only got, what, 8-9 books out, really? I mean, total?
It is curious. A lot of these authors that... Like Patrick Rothfuss, amazing author, but like two and a half books out. Like,
2.5 books,
and it's
right.
been over a decade or something.
Mm-hmm.
Come on,
mm-hmm.
and right. I guess he has some personal.
Quit playing
D&D
with Will Wheaton and get your butt in the chair, buddy.
Yeah. I don't know if you had no day job, and
right.
you could write for, let's say, 2 to 6 to 8 hours a day, you should be cranking out at least one novel a month easily.
Right. Yeah.
Even if they're super long, maybe every 2 months.
And that's the cool thing about Dean when he started his, I forget what the name of the series is, but writing in public,
mm-hmm.
blogging every day as a writer.
Yeah.
Hey, I sat down for an hour and a half and pecked away at, got 800 words. And then I came back and a couple hours later and I got, you know, 700 words, and at mm-hmm. the end of the day he's got 1500 words, and that's, you know, I don't know the math on that, but times 10, that's 10,005. I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know,
he's not a super fast writer. He just puts in the hours and he works
and he just does it. And that's the thing, we you know, and I think we all worry, like we worry that it's taking us too long and we just forget
mm-hmm.
how to just keep moving
yeah.
forward. You know, a lot of people are hard on George R. R. Martin. Like, he's only mm-hmm. got one thing he's working on, which is ridiculous because the guy's been writing for TV since the 80s.
Okay.
He's obviously he's got the Game of Thrones, but he also has the Wild Card series. He's got other stuff that he works on. He, you know, edits anthologies, and he's still, you know, pretty sought after writing, I think, for television and some other places. And I assume he writes under an assumed name somewhere in TV. Cause I mean, why would you give that up? That's mm-hmm. the thing. He's got a lot of irons in the fire. And so
sure.
he's built, you know, he's sort of, yeah, the fantasy novels are great, but I gotta, you know, pay the bills. And
yeah.
And I think people give him a hard time just because of the Game of Thrones thing, but he's always working on something.
Yeah. I'm trying to wait until he finishes those to start them. Just because I can't read it and then 8 years later read the next one, and that would just drive me crazy. I like to mainline through the first to the last, if I can.
I kind of want to get a hold of him and say, look, George, if you don't finish them, you're going to die and John Scalzi will finish it. Is that what you want to happen? You want John Scalzi finishing your books? Brandon Sanderson, you want him finishing your books?
Right.
Nobody will die if Brandon gets a hold of these. So, you know, anyway. What would you say to that writer who hasn't maybe taken... Okay, what would you say to me, Dan, since I'm that writer, who is sitting on a few things? You know, needs to just get some stuff up and do it. Like, what would you say to me? What would you be your pep talk?
One thing that really helped me as far as, like, writing a first draft, which I need to get back into because I've been kind of revising this upcoming novel, and so I haven't been writing any first draft lately. But Seinfeld, Jerry Seinfeld, was a hardworking comedian, and he took a calendar. Yeah. And every single day that he wrote new jokes, he would mark an X in the box of that day on his calendar. The next day, another X. Pretty soon, it kind of looks like a red chain. And he says, don't break the chain. And so while I was finishing this current novel, Haunted House Flipper, that's coming out on 3/30, I just said, even if it's for 5 minutes a day, I'm going to write every day. And that was really freeing to me because it gave me a really low barrier of entry to start, because starting is the hardest part. And there were...
No, wait. I thought the waiting was the hardest part.
Oh, yeah. There were so many days where I surprised myself thinking, I'm exhausted, my brain is done, I'm not going to be able to write anything that is going to be worthwhile later. I'm exhausted. But I know I can write for 5 minutes, or I can write 100 words. I'll get something down. And before I knew it, I had written like for 45 minutes, and I wrote like 800 words. And they were good words, and I came up with some new idea for the story. But man, I never would have guessed I could have even written any good sentences if I hadn't just started. So,
well, it's kind of like I liken it to walking outside. And the sun is shining, and I mean, you don't know, you're in Northwest U.S. Sun never's out there. it's like you get some fresh air, you get some clarity, and it's kind of like once you start exercising the muscles, things loosen up. And the brain starts, your subconscious goes, oh, okay, hey, I'm in here. Hello. I have some things to say. Here you go. Here's one. Yeah. And it builds from there. See, you want to know what my biggest problem is right now, Dan?
Tell me.
This right here. Can you see that?
Yeah.
That says Star Wars Battlefront 2. That is my biggest problem right now, but I'm actually...
I know, I have... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I have actually progressed very well in the game, and so some of my playing is tapered off a bit, so I may be able to get a little more productive.
Yeah. I got the new Zelda, and that's the coolest, best video game I've ever played. But
I've heard.
You can only have one saved game, and my 9-year-old was like, I want to save up and buy another system so I can at least have my own. I was like, you know what? It's going to take me years to beat it. Just go ahead and delete mine, and you can play. And so now I play every once in a while to help him, but I went to school to make video games. I do architectural stuff now. I love video games, but I hardly ever play them anymore, and I try really hard to use any free time I have to write or work on editing or something. And I still do lots of other things too with my free time. But if like my wife's going to go out with her friends and I have like a 3-hour chunk after I lay the kids down or something, it sometimes is like an epic internal struggle to not play Zelda, but I will choose to write instead.
Yeah.
So
that's called self-discipline. And that's why, kids, that's why Dan here has, how many, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, I count in ones, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15.
Mostly short 16, stories.
18 things up in his Kindle store. And you know how many independently published things I have up?
One.
I still don't have
count
a full-length novel,
one.
Though.
Yeah, go ahead.
I still, those are mostly short stories. I have one novelette and one novella.
Oh,
and
a
then
novelette.
This will be my first published full-length novel. So I'm excited about that. Because
so,
I don't read short stories either. So why would I expect other people to buy mine, you know? I read novels, so...
The novellas that I wrote for the Wars series, those are about 33,000 to 35,000, mm-hmm. I think. And those were really good length.
It's
a fun length. Yeah, it is a fun length. And I think it's better than, for me, it's better than a short story. Because I feel like in a short story, you're trying to express like one idea.
Right.
And I can't limit myself to just one idea.
Yeah.
But anyway, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I just have had certain ideas that lend themselves to only being a short story over the years. And also, I just wanted to try and start and finish some stories. So I started doing a bunch of short stories.
Mm-hmm.
So.
All right. So what would you say about the family dynamic? Because you're what I like to consider a family man. You know, you're married, you have four kids, two of your own, two adopted. Mm-hmm. How do you sort of, what do you do in that relationship to sort of prioritize your writing time?
I don't.
okay, good.
I get most of my writing done during my commute by talking into my phone, to be honest.
Oh.
Using speech to text or recording it and then dictating it and transcribing it later.
Yeah.
So pretty much I wake up and I have about an hour commute. And so I wake up, I go to work, I come home, I hang out with my kids, and then we lay them down, and I hang out with my wife, and then I go to bed. So,
'cause you're tired.
Yeah. And so usually I don't do much. And sometimes my wife works from home, so sometimes she's like, hey, do you care if I worked for like an hour tonight? And I'm like, I'll edit my novel. Sweet.
Right.
But we don't go on that many dates, so we sort of we lay our kids down early. And that's sort of a nightly date night for us. We lay the kids down, and then we have time to talk without little ones asking us a million questions. But,
right.
You know, when I did say that I wrote every day when I did that stint, I would just find time here and there. And that's why sometimes I just made it okay to write. Okay, I have 15 minutes. But I was already thinking that day about this upcoming scene. So when I had time, I would just fit it in there. But, so yeah, it's weird, like a lot, like my second novel, I think I wrote pretty much all of it using speech to text with my BlackBerry back in the day.
Oh,
it was
gosh.
Like 80,000 words, so.
Wow.
I do that a lot. I do that a lot too because it's so much faster than writing, and I think my dialogue comes out more natural. But my favorite way to write is on a keyboard, so.
Hmm.
Yeah, but I would say, trying to go to bed early and waking up and doing it in the morning, but it's just never worked for me. I'm not a morning person. My wife and I just stay up late naturally. So, yeah, but I don't know, whatever you can do to carve out time, to give something up so that you can have even a half hour a day or, yeah. The one thing I discovered that I really loved is cause I always thought I'm so busy. That's great that they say write every day. I just can't do that. But I discovered a great thing. Even if I wrote for 5 minutes one day, it still kept my mind fresh in the story. And so unlike usual when it's like, oh, I have 3 hours. The last time I wrote was 2.5 weeks ago. Let's do this. I'd have to catch up to where I was when I stopped writing the last time. Whereas if you write every day, even if it's for 15 minutes or less a day, you remember from the last day. You can just read a few paragraphs and you're like, oh yeah. Or you've been thinking about it since the day before. So that's one reason I love writing every day, even if it's for short periods. It keeps your mind in the story. And then, because I think your subconscious is working on your story constantly. Mm-hmm. And it will do it more if you're writing every day. So I love that aspect of writing every day.
Well, and that's been the real interesting thing for me, was especially looking at, again, our Yoda, Dean Wesley Smith, talking about the subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And really thinking about what that means. Because at first it was like really kind of esoteric. Like, well, I don't understand what you mean. Let the subconscious.
What? Yeah.
Huh? Like, I was too wrapped up in my conscious mind. Really trying to learn how to stop letting critical voice be in the way while you're trying to use creative voice to write things.
Mm-hmm.
And letting your inner 2-year-old play. And, but the more I've kind of thought through it and sort of tried to free myself up from it, the more it kind of reveals itself. And trying to get back to I used to make up stories on the fly with my G.I. Joes all the time when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what happened? What happened? Adulthood happened. Kids, that's what happened. A little piece of me died inside. No. But see, the problem is that for me, if I wait around for free time,
mm-hmm.
when free time happens, inevitably I am beat.
Sure.
Like my brain can't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for me, if I try to do that, it's not going to work. And it's going to be like writing is like torture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and writing's supposed to be fun.
Dean says that a lot.
But it's like working out. You know, if you just wait until free time to go work out, you're never going to work out, because you're always going to be like, I just don't feel like it. I'm tired. You know, you have to say, this is the time to go work out, and you have to ready yourself to do it.
Yep. You're talking about working out. I also got the idea because someone said they wanted to start doing push-ups. So they said, every time I brush my teeth, I have to do 5 push-ups. And they said that once they started, they'd usually keep going and do like 35. But they set the bar so low that it wouldn't stop them from starting. And so that's what I did with my writing time.
Right.
And it helped a lot, so.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And once you get started, you can, mm-hmm. I got 10 more minutes. I can, I can keep doing this a little bit longer. And, or even if you have more time and you're just, well, I'll do a little bit now and then go mow the grass or something. And then before you know it, the grass isn't mowed and it's dark outside, you know? it just happens that way.
Yep.
Anyway, I hope, if you listen to this, that you got something out of this, something hopefully encouraging, maybe something to sort of use for yourself. And, we'd love to hear feedback. So you can go to adventuresofindianajim.net, click on the cover art for The Writing Crusade. You can leave a comment on the blog post for this episode. You can email writing@adventuresofindianajim.net. Dan, where can people find you?
DanTheArtMan.com.
All right. And on Twitter, DanTheArtMan, right?
Yes.
And I am Indiana Jim on the tweeters. And also on Facebook. So,
me too.
Anyway, thanks a lot for joining me, Dan. And hopefully we'll make a habit of this.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. Thanks for having me on, Jim. This was great.
Absolutely. All right. Until next time, we will talk at y'all later. Just remember that, the grail's not that important. You gotta let it go. Just let it go, Elsa. Right?
Right. See you guys next time.
Julia!